Jack Arnold, Reel One. Where were you born, Mr. Arnold?
Liversedge.
Which year was that?
1920, May the 1st.
What did your father do for a living?
A blacksmith.
Was he self-employed?
No. Up to 1940, he worked for a chap called Terry. That was his surname, Terry. But then he started a business of his own as a shoeing and general smith.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
To do what?
I went into the mill as an apprentice tuner. That's a mechanic with the looms for weaving carpets.
Was that at Liversedge?
At Liversedge, yes. But I didn't stay there long, and I went to Edmund White Manufacturing Company in the carpet weaving department, and probably if I'd have stayed there, I would eventually have finished up as a carpet weaver.
How did you come to be in the army then?
Well, I joined the Territorials, first of all, the C Company, 4th Battalion, Duke of Wellington's. January, I think it was, 38. And even in those days, there were unemployment in the area, and we were working 3 days a week. So I decided to join the regular army in October 1938.
Why did you go in for the territorials, though?
Well, because about six of us in the department of the factory were all went and joined together. We tried to get in the artillery at Bradford, but they were full up, so we went to the Dukes at Cleckheaton.
But what was the attraction of the TA?
Well, I don't know. Not really. It was something what my mates were doing, so I'd probably join with them.
Can we jump ahead now to after the war, and can you tell me how you came to go to Korea in 1950?
Well, when I was demobbed in 1946, I was still on class, regular army reserve, not class Z, which is it, class, I forgot now which class it was, but our regular army reserve, I joined regular army reserve pay monthly, and I was recalled to the colours in 10th of the 8th, 1950, which was 10th of August, 1950. They called quite a few reserves up at the time, and we were told originally that we weren't going to Korea, but it was obvious that we were.
How did you react when you heard that you were being recalled to the colours?
Well, I was a bit disappointed because I'd only, approximately 8 weeks to do on reserve before I finished. And I was working for my father then. I was more or less apprenticed, even at 26 years of age. Oh, 30, wouldn't it be? 30 years of age. I was learning shoeing, general blacksmithing, electric and gas welding. So I was going to break into all of that. I'd only been out of the army for a year.
So you must have been furious, were you?
Well, in a way, yeah. What made me more furious was later on when we were stopped at a place called Banja. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly or not. It's in Iran or Iraq. It was a rough landing field.
Habania?
No, it was a Banja. And we were flying out to Japan in rough Hastings, and there were blokes coming back from the Far East and the Middle East back home to be demobbed. Also, one instance, a friend of mine, the army paid too. He was a miner, and he had a lot of goods, furniture on take credit, and the army pay what he was getting wouldn't cover his credit him. And the people who, officers and that, who interviewed him about this called him a liar, that he wasn't paying so much in credit weekly. So he had to send it home for all his forms and to prove that he had this debt, and the army had to pay that debt for him because he'd been called back. That was one grievance we had. All the men who were called back were Second World War men, very experienced soldiers, and you joined a regiment, in my case, 45th Field, where only, I think, there were so many percentage of the gunners were allowed the top rates of pay, some star racket, what they had. And we who were called back knew more than some of the sergeants as regards signalling, wireless sets and line laying than the sergeants did. But the forces, I think, due to the reservists being recalled, got a pay increase to keep those reservists quiet in 1950.
Had the army changed much from when you'd been demobbed?
Well, I can only go by... I was only ever in two regiments, the 33rd Field Regiment, 39 to 1946, and then this 45th Field Regiment, who I joined on recall. But the difference in the regiments were, the 33rd Field Regiment, to my opinion, were 10 times more, possibly much more efficient than 45th Field Regiment ever was.
In what way?
In every way. The gunners were more trained, the officers were better and the lot. For instance, in 33rd Field Regiment, 99% of the men could drive, irrespective of whether they were drivers or not. All men could drive their own vehicles as if any casualties came, like, for instance, myself, the old PIAC on a Sherman tank, if anything happened to the driver, I could take his place in the driving seat, or I could go into the turret on the wireless sets too. 33rd Field Regiment, more or less every man could do two or three, even three jobs.
But they couldn't do that in the 45th?
Well, not from my experience of it was.
What was your job in the 45th Field Regiment?
Well, this is a story. What harps back to the Second World War, I was an old PIAC from D-Day onwards, and I'd seen quite a bit at the sharp end. I had a few officers wounded and killed at the observation post, and on recall, I had no intention whatsoever of going back onto the old P job.
What is a PIAC?
Observation post assistant. We were interviewed by the second in command of 45th Field Regiment individually, and a Major Withers, it was, he asked me what my job was, and I told him I used to be a Batsy Donar, but he had all my records at front of him. He said, "Oh, but you were a driver operator." "Oh, but sir," I said to him, "if you look back to the records of 1943, you see where I relinquished that rank." And he looked, "Oh," he says, "yes." He says, "well, what did you do then?" I said, "I've told you I was a Batsy Donar." And that was it. Well, I found out the Batsy captain, Ante Batman, Captain Matthews, the Batsy captain, had no Batman, and I thought to myself, well, if I get to be his Batman and his Donar, that means I'll be at the wagon lines, out of the action, or if we're going to action in Korea. So I went and saw Matthews, and he was quite pleased to have me as his Batman and Donar. And with getting that job, I went to Korea with the advance party of 29th Brigade. We flew over to Japan.
In what?
if I remember rightly, there were RAF Hastings, four-engine RAF Hastings. And we left Lynham, Wiltshire, isn't it, Lynham?
Yes.
On the Friday, 13th of October, 1950. That's one date I can always remember, because superstitious people say it's a bad day to fly, it's the 13th, especially if it's a Friday. And I'd never flown before, so I'm quaking a bit. Anyway, it was quite good. I enjoyed this flight. But we didn't fly direct to Japan. We staged the night at certain places on the way. For instance, the first night, we flew from Lynham to Malta. The following day, we flew from Malta to Albania. Do you want all this?
Yes.
From Albania to Karachi in India. Stayed the night at each place in the barracks. And remember Karachi, there were bed bugs, and a bit scruffy as hell there. From there we flew to Colombo in Ceylon. Now I'm a bit... From Ceylon we flew to Singapore. We stayed 2 days at Singapore. From Singapore we flew down to Clark Field in Manila. And from Manila to Japan. I don't remember the name of the place. But we crossed from Japan to Busan, roughly, approximately, October 22nd, 1950.
By sea?
By sea, yes.
Who was in this advance party?
Well, there was a major with us, which was the second commander of 45th. Captain Matthews and myself, a party from the Royal Ulster Rifles, Northumberland Fusiliers, and Gloucesters of the 29th Brigade, and maybe one or two odd buds as well.
How much did you know about the Korean War before you went?
Nothing. Nothing whatsoever.
Didn't you know anything about how it had been started?
Pardon?
Didn't you know anything about how it had been started?
Well, they told us that the North Koreans had invaded the South, and that was it, as far as we were concerned. That was what we were told. What I still read from the presses of this country that the North Koreans invaded the South.
Were you happy with that explanation?
Well, we had no other explanation till later.
We'll come on to later, later on. But did you get any kind of briefing before you went to Korea?
Not really, no. No.
Did you take anything special with you?
Yes, a load of soap for bartering purposes. Because I found out in the Second World War, when we liberated anywhere in Europe, soap was as good, if not better, than money. And cigarettes, of course. Coffee. But I didn't take coffee to Korea, but I took a load of soap with me.
How much did you take?
Oh, quite a lot, I forgot now. Possibly half a big pack full. And I lost it all when I was taken prisoner.
Did you find that people did want to barter for soap?
Not really, no. Not in Korea.
So it was a waste of effort?
Well, in a way it was, although I hadn't to buy any at the naffy and things were short, weren't they? Especially being on the advance party, we were looked after by the Americans in Japan. I don't think there were established Japanese reinforcement base depot in them days, like there were when we were released in 53. And we were looked after by the Yanks. One thing about the Yanks, what I thoroughly enjoyed, were everybody, irrespective of rank, all went into the same canteen, all went into the same dining hall, especially in the Philippines.
So it was more democratic than the...
Oh, yes, much more. Also, Do you want me to say all
yes,
this?
Yes, yes.
I had a Sten gun, which had been adapted by old rifle butts and made into quite a respectable piece of armoury. And I had 9mm ammunition, which I bartered with Americans for some of their equipment. For example, those leather jump boots, what the parachutists wore, which served me in very, very good stead when I was a prisoner of war, those boots. Very good. I also had other things off the Americans, like their military Macintosh, you know, raincoats, which were good. So by the time I've been in Korea some days, but I had no ammunition left for my Sten gun. I still had the Sten gun, but no ammunition because it all gone to the Yanks, because they had Lugers what took the same ammunition, and they had no ammunition for it, what were souvenirs that probably got from the Second World War somehow or another.
What was the idea of this advance party?
Well, like everybody else, you went and found billets for the troops who were coming on behind you. In our case, I'm a bit vague on this respect. From Busan, we went north by train. I do know we went to Seoul, but I may be mistaken that we went further up and then returned to Seoul, but we did finish up near Kaesong, and we formed a school, we commandeered a school for the regiment, for their billets near Kaesong, and I think it had something to do with Kaesong University. But as I say, it's what, 30 odd years in now, isn't it? You lose some things. And I'm not quite sure when the regiment came. I think it was about the 7th or 8th of November when the regiment came. They came from sea, of course, bringing the guns with them. But I never saw my motorbike. They said the roads were too rough. So I never rode a motorbike in Korea, apart from one day I had to go on a Yankee Harley Davidson, which not... I wasn't quite used to. I ran it into a ditch. I didn't hurt myself, but the bike was more or less a total write-off. So I was still doing Batman then for this Captain Matthews. And then when the regiment came, we advanced north with 29th Brigade, north of Pyongyang. And then the retreat, the Chinese came through. We had the rumours about 50,000 horsemen riding 50,000 shaggy ponies. And there was a quick dash back from the road to Pyongyang down to the south once more.
When you first got to Korea, what kind of impression did the place make on you?
What, the place?
Korea itself.
Oh, it was a, my opinion, it was a right scruff place, similar to the Palestine and places like that.
In what way was it scruffy?
Well, the sanitation in the streets, running down the gutters, and the toilets were anywhere and stuff like that. There were no... although, as I say, we were with the Americans, and these camps, what the American had for the reinforcements, the American soldiers were not supposed to go allowed out of those camps on a night. But they did get out through the fencing or whatever they were. Easy enough to get out of. You can call them barracks. There were no barracks, they were living in anything they could find around the Busan area.
What did they get out to do?
Well, shagging. that's putting it crudely, after the women.
Was there a lot of that going on?
I should imagine so. But I never fancied it there, not there.
Well, because of the fear of disease?
Well, yeah, that. But he never had the opportunity, really. Though more discipline, even though we were a party of our own, there were much more discipline in the British Army there than there were with the Yankee Army.
In what way?
Well, in every way. Like obeying orders. I didn't just go and disobey order for sake of disobeying one. If I knew order were wrong, then I'd disobey it. For one example, before we left for Korea, before the regiment went to Korea, I went with on a motorbike and we took a party of gun quads from Colchester to Shrewsbury, I think it was. And coming back, an officer in charge took the wrong road through a town. I stopped the column after the first three vehicles had gone on and sent him on the proper road. He went through the town, we went on the bypass, and then I stopped them at the far side of the bypass and waited while he came. And then we carried on. Next morning he came to me and asked me why I'd done that. I said, because you went the wrong way, sir. Well, he says, you should have followed. I said, no, sir. I was always taught that to follow orders, but if I knew that the officer was wrong, then to use my own initiative, which I did then, and he walked away and said nothing. He knew I was right.
But you found that the Americans had a different attitude to discipline, did you?
Oh, aye.
Can you give some examples?
Well, they were all for away, what do they call it? AWOL, away without leave, on the run, a couple of days and they come back, stuff like that. That were in these reinforcement camps. What happened in their own battalions, I don't know. I'm only talking about the camp itself, the reinforced base depot of the Americans.
Did the British and American troops like each other or not?
Well, I always got on all right with them, more so because I was on the scrounge for whatever I could get out of them, like their shirts and stuff like that. They're very good equipment, you know, the Yanks.
Well, you'd barter stuff with them?
Oh, I always scrounge it off and ask them for it. They're very individually, American soldiers are a great bloke, individually. But en masse, they're a bloody menace.
Why is that?
Well, they're so cocksure and all like that all together. But you'll get a man, an American, on his own and be pally with him and you couldn't wish to meet a better man. It's the same probably in every race. Individually, you're all right with them, but you can't stand them en masse.
But when you say they were cocksure en masse, you mean they were overconfident, do you?
Well, I wouldn't say... They were overconfident when things were going right, but if things were going wrong, they were in a different position altogether then. They were very downhearted. They soon got downhearted. In a way, do you want to come back to that later?
Yes, we can come back.
When we're in the camp.
Yes, all right.
It'll be better.
You were talking about your first impressions of Korea. Did the country show much sign of being knocked about by the war?
Oh, yeah. Not down at the beginning where we landed at first at Pusan and that, where the perimeter, the original perimeter were around there. After, when we got on that train and we went through the places what the North Koreans, not the Chinese, the North Koreans had occupied, then most of the villages had been bombed to hell. Not by high explosive bomb, majority of the places, napalm. A bloody disgrace it was, where they carried on with that in Korea.
Why do you think napalm was such a disgrace?
Well, look at the terrible weapon. Everybody, more or less now, has seen the results of napalm with the photographs from Vietnam. It doesn't, high explosive doesn't distinguish between civilian and soldier, but napalm, I think, is a terrifying weapon to use against well, let's say there were innocent villages with no targets in them at all. They were just the main supply route went through them, and every village what you came to outside of that zone had all been destroyed by fire, and the fire was from napalm.
So the earth was just scorched, was it?
Well, yes, the towns, and I have a photograph there I'll show you of Sinanju. And every building's still intact. It's all bent down. There's no roofs or anything, and there's no factory in sight. I don't know where I got that photograph from, actually.
Did you see civilian casualties from the farm?
Oh, personally, no. No, I didn't. I see wounded after. Now, whether from, they were bandaged up, a rough bandage, what they were from, I have no idea. But I can't honestly say that wound was caused by napalm. You can only see what, like the buildings themselves have been gutted by fire. And that was every village and town on the supply, the MSR, main supply route.
Did you see much of the Korean civilians?
Not a great deal, no. No. Not until I was captured. We did, when we got to that school, a university at Kaesong, there were one or two came round there, and you could have them cleaning your kit and all like that. But once the regiment came and the other officers came, they cleared them all out of the school, the huts and the lot where the men were sleeping. Wouldn't allow them in.
What did you think to the Korean civilians?
Well, I haven't much chance to bother with them, you see. Because as soon as the regiment came up and 29th Brigade, that, what they call him, Brigadier Brodie, he was in a big hurry to make a name for himself and get up into the action lines.
Now, you said that your artillery unit was attached to a 29th Brigade.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about the role that it was supposed to perform with 29th Brigade?
Right, well, the field regiment was part of 29th Brigade. In a brigade, you have three battalions of infantry, a field regiment, and other arms, Army Service Corps, Medical Corps, and the lot. But the field regiment is an integral part of the brigade, irrespective of what brigade it is, like 3rd British Infantry Division, you're 7th, 8th and 185 brigades, and you're 3 field regiments, 1 field regiment to each brigade.
So to back up the infantry?
Yeah.
But presumably with your job you wouldn't have had anything to do with the actual guns?
No, I was never on the gun, never. But with my job there in Korea, what I was more or less the a spare file in Korea, with being just a battery captain's batman, and I'd no bike, I wasn't doing donor work or anything. I used to ride in the water truck or the captain's 1500 weight vehicle, anything, or a dog's body. Do you want me to carry on?
Yes.
With this? Though? Well, it would be, we'd been up north to Pyongyang, and we were driven back then.